Hi everyone, you're watching another episode of Feminine Wealth TV, the show that uncovers the diamond tips on creating truly conscious wealth from change makers, world shakers, and wealth creators. Look, today I'm super excited because I have my first ever international guest on the show. We have Pina De Rosa here on the show. Pina, welcome.
Hi, thank you, Barbara. Thanks for having me. I love this.
So, Pina, you're a mindset effectiveness expert, you're a TEDx speaker and an award-winning producer. I just love that you've got so many different things going on there. It's fantastic.
Yeah, they all have a common thread for sure, but there's different ways that that common thread expresses itself.
You know, and one of the things when I came across you and your work, I mean, I was so excited because I discovered you through mutual friends of ours, which is just a lovely way to find a guest for the show.
I love people in Australia. I have so many friends there. So we all come connected.
Yeah. And when I saw, you know, that you had actually done a TEDx talk, because it's one of my personal goals to do one of those. And I think a lot of people would have that goal.
Absolutely.
So I just thought, wow, I've got to get you on the show to talk about this. But before we delve into the actual the TEDx and the talk and the impact, etc., why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do, a bit about yourself and what you do?
I was born and raised in Italy. I was then, my family moved to Switzerland, and then when I was 18 I moved to America, where I am now speaking to you from. I live in Los Angeles. I've lived in LA for over 20 years, and I absolutely love it. And the reason I'm in Los Angeles, one of the things I expressed in my TED Talk, it was a childhood dream. I feel right at home here. And probably because I feel like a lot of the personal development around the world is in books. And then in places like Los Angeles, and there's different cities around the world, possibly London and Sydney, those personal development books become...
become real, I suppose.
I think they can become real everywhere in every city, but there's so much available here in the form of trainings and workshops and coaching and, and, you know, taking it outside of the two-dimensional, three-dimensional of a book into an actual
a community,
career.
I guess. So
my passion, my passion became my training became my career. It became just all in one. I started out with one of the books that I think everybody loves, The Alchemist, was one of the books.
Everyone's read that.
Gave me my 18th birthday, and then I had, when I was even younger, my dad gave me a couple books from Wayne Dyer. So for me, it was always in books and as a hobby, as an interest. So what I love about being in LA is that it's now in my life as I could actually make money doing what I love and
doing your hobby.
And it's just so much fun. I love this. So,
and you're helping a huge amount of people. It must be so uplifting to help that many people.
It's fulfilling to see when people when there's nothing like broken or something that they need to fix or do more of. It's just that there's stuff in the way. And my specialties and identifying what it is and taking that out of the way. So what is left is more of that person, and to be able to see that and to see them soar with it, because it's kind of like when the water is flowing, the water's always flowing, but if there's leaves that are stuck in the filters, it just takes a little bit longer. So my specialty is clearing out all the filters, especially in the mind, and then that person is left with more of who they are, more of their light, more of their clarity, more of their passion, more of their purpose, and you just watch them soar, and then finally the external results and the internal life match up and have a congruence, which is just such a gift to be able to see it.
And you know what I love about that, actually? I mean, I think, you know, the work I do with people, obviously I help people with, you know, wealth and their money and making more money. But a lot of my programs and what I talk about as well is you have to actually start with the work that you're talking about, because then you actually unleash more of that person's inherent value, you know, and what is truly in them.
Yeah, and the tools that you offer then end up being result-oriented instead of hit and miss, because it's not about the tools or even the right tools. It is of course the right tools, but it's where you plant them. You know, because if I had Richard Branson himself coach me for 3 months, but my mind is full of self-doubt or overwhelm, then even his tools
won't help you. No.
It'll just be hit and miss. Just like planting seeds in a garden that has weeds. Some flowers will grow, some will get strangled. So clear out the garden first and then plant the awesome tools like the ones that you offer.
Yes.
And then just watch them grow with ease, with flow.
And that's the secret to success in anything. I mean, that's the thing. You have to create the right environment for success to actually come forward.
Environment, for sure. Yeah. One of our seven energy centers, by far,
So tell me, I'm dying to know, I mean, how did the whole TEDx talk unfold? How did you get into that?
Sort of like the Reader's Digest version is I went to see and support a friend of mine speak. I have a lot of friends who are speakers, being a speaker, and we go to each other's and learn and grow and evolve and support each other. And when I went to see her TED talk, it was the first time that I thought to myself, wait a minute, these things are only are awesome, but they're actually real. It's not just a two-dimensional cool video of someone in Johannesburg or someone, you know, somewhere other cool place, and it was seen, you know, 200,000 times, and that was great.
Yeah.
But it's actually a friend, and it's live, and it's in my neighborhood. Wow, that's cool. And for about 2 or 3 months, I kept that thought to myself of like, oh, I could do one of those. Yeah. I could do one of those, because I was already speaking anyway. I've been speaking for years, so it's not like it was reinventing the wheel. But there's just something about TED that has a bit of a like a brand around
recognition
around
level.
It.
Yeah.
Like all of a sudden, once my TED was done and it went out back to my family in Italy, now they're like, oh, we understand what she does. And I'm like, I've been doing this for years. But all of a sudden they get it. And so even though they may not understand English, you know, one of my uncles doesn't even speak English, but he was like, good, thumbs up.
I love that.
So then a couple of months after that, I was applying for a mastermind because, you know, as a coach, I always like to stretch myself. It was about July, August, and I was applying for a mastermind group, and they had this questionnaire and your one goal, 1 year goal, 3 year goal, 5 year goal. And 5 year goal, when I got to that, I was stumped, but I really wanted to be part of the mastermind. So I was like, okay, what could be a good 5 year stretch? I'll do a TED talk. Oh my gosh, I'm writing it down. They're really going to think I'm going to do this. But hey, 5 years, I've got time to work it out. And then about a month later, I met with the ladies. The name of the mastermind group, it's a women's philanthropy goal group, The New Hollywood. So you can find it at thenewhollywood.org. It's a nonprofit organization. We support other nonprofits and we support women and creating wealth and goals and all that beautiful stuff. So we met and they were deciding which members to let in and which ones to not let in. So I met with the president, vice president, and the founder of the New Hollywood. And it was for the first time that I actually voiced it out loud, because they said, okay, tell us about your 1 year, 3 year, 5 year goals and what you'd like to contribute to the group, you know, all that stuff that happens with masterminds. And I voiced it to them, and it just, you know how when you say something out loud.
Say it out loud, it becomes real.
Yeah, it becomes more real, it becomes more scary, it becomes more uncomfortable, it becomes more like, okay, now
I have to do it.
And these are all women that I look up to, not like, oh my gosh, they're so far out there, which they are, but more like as a way to stretch myself and grow and create peers and partnership and support them and what they're up to. And a few of them are clients of mine. I'd actually spoken at that group a few years prior. So there was a sense of just, I just really love what they stand for. There's like a ton of Barbaras in the group, you know, so it's a really big group. And then the next day or 2 days after, I went on vacation, I went back home to Italy. I try to go a couple of every other year. And so I took off. And I was offline for a couple of weeks. I came back. And when I came back, it was mid-September, there was an invitation in my email.
Oh, I love it.
TED.
Yeah.
I fell off my chair. Just
wow,
like,
that's amazing. Serendipity.
Didn't do anything. I was like, who, what? But what I had done is after I had spoken with them, a phone call came and another one, and I started saying, oh, this is what I'm up to, I'd like to do. Like, I started verbalizing those crazy goals, because we all have crazy goals.
And you wrote it down.
Right? And somehow one little soldier of light, you know, because they're like little soldiers of light, it just went to one person, another person, another person, and then the email came to me and I just literally fell off my chair. It was here in my neck of the woods, and I had applied to a couple of other TED Talks because, you know, you go and you participate and you meet the organizers, and that's what I highly recommend. If there is a TED in your area, just Google it and go and participate, meet the organizers and whatnot. But there was so much red tape, and somehow just I hadn't heard back. So I was, because it was just between me and me, I was not verbal about it, but I was disappointed. I was like, man, there's so much red tape. I know I could contribute so much. Come on, people. I was being a little feisty about it, but it was just me. And
it was a 5-year goal, and you were still being feisty. It turned into a 1-year goal.
Within 5 weeks of speaking that goal, the invitation came in. I was just like, okay, I know this works, but to be reminded that this works,
that's always just me.
I feel surprised, you know. So then it was, but it was just an invitation. So I still had to apply. My application then was accepted. There was 3 female speakers as part of that live TED, and it was recorded about maybe 8 weeks later or something like that. I spent about 5 weeks prepping on that and choosing the different stories and, you know, practicing it, putting it together, and really just what I remember my TED coach, because we were assigned a TED coach for an afternoon, what my TED coach said to me, and it said, you know, TED is your opportunity to transcend what you normally speak about, to set up a
new level
your audience and then to surprise them. So from that context, I knew exactly which stories and which stories were not going to be told and which stories had to be told.
I mean, because I know that, you know, you started, I mean, you made the decision to start your TED Talk with a very personal, really difficult story about being, unfortunately, date raped at university. And, you know, I have to admit, when I watched your TED Talk, I'm actually getting tingly right now remembering it, because I remember when I watched your TED Talk, I was drawn in that first few minutes because of that story. And I wanted to know, it led really well into the actual part of the talk that you did on choices. But how difficult was it really to stand up there and to decide? Because you hadn't told anybody that story at that stage.
I hadn't. Yeah. I remember I called my dad the day before and my mom 2 days before to let them know I was in college, because they didn't even know. Nobody knew. It was one of those stories that was, as I share in my TED Talk, never again. And I just put it under the rug. I had just arrived in America. I didn't want to say anything to anybody, because what if I was shipped back to Europe? This was my dream. I just gotten myself into trouble one way or another, and I just became really vigilant. I was still figuring out how university worked, and so I'm not going to give away what and the how, because you guys can
watch the TED Talk.
But there is that sense of the first 3 minutes of the talk, you just go. And then it's really that they had asked me specifically to talk about the name of the name of the theme for the day, because it's one of the is assigned when you do a TED Talk, they'll tell you what the theme is. And the theme was living a life of purpose, and they said, and we want you to open with the impact of choices, then we'll have a speaker that will open and continue on focus, and then we'll have a speaker that will address the power of intention. And so they had a very specific way that the day was going to go. And when my coach said what he said to me that afternoon, that we were assigned that TED coach about setting up an expectation and then surprise them, and always, you know, TED is always your opportunity to transcend what you normally speak about. I had actually written that story, but I didn't practice it. I didn't share it. I didn't go to the rehearsal with it, you know, because they did one tech rehearsal the week before, you know, for lights and all that. And the feedback I got was like, it's good.
It needs more punch.
And so it's like, but it seems like your life is just perfect. Like, there was no overcoming. And I was like, yeah, well, there is a story. But I was so ashamed of the story. And I was so, like, I didn't think it was going to make that much of a difference.
the impact of it. Yeah.
It's just, and my brother happened to be in town. My brother also lives overseas, like the rest of my family. I'm the only one here in the U.S., me and my dog. And still the Thursday night before, because this was shot on a Saturday morning, we did a rehearsal just between him and two other close friends here in my living room, just to get the flow of it and just, you know, choose the final little things. And I said, well, should I really? Because I had to share the story with him, of course, because he didn't know. And so after all that, I said, really, is that something that is worth, I'm not sure.
I find that fascinating that you would think, because it's set the story, like, I mean, really, the talk was really good, but the story was is the powerful piece of that talk.
And that's what my brother reminded me of, because to me, it was one of those stories that was like Christmas ornaments forgotten in the basement, put in a box somewhere to never be looked at again, because there was so much pain connected with it and so much stuff that was possibly, when you open that made
Pandora's box, yeah.
Exactly. And he said something, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he said something along the lines of, you know, so many of us, year after year, we fight or we hit against something, and it's, we don't know what it is, but it would just, like, we keep hitting against something, and it's, we can't quite see it, but we know it's there. And if you've uncovered yours by you sharing it with others, it may help others uncover what theirs is. It doesn't need to be a trauma, but there's something that
is stopping people.
Plus, it's my job to get people unstuck anyways. So he was like, it will be a contribution to others because it will give a voice and it will give vision to things that they may have not voiced or seen before.
Yeah.
And so I did it because of the impact of contribution, and I trust my brother, and if it helps other people, then by all means. Because it was so freaking uncomfortable, sorry, but it was so unfamiliar. It was, you know, it was, but I was speaking it like I was speaking a movie that I've seen 20 years ago, because this had happened such a long time ago.
Yeah.
And then on the moment, in the day, it was actually the first time that I got emotional about it, surprisingly so, because every time that I practiced it with friends,
it was just mechanical until then.
I was, you know, I feel like I'm an authentic speaker, so I was speaking it, but it never really just
came from the heart, deep.
It didn't catch my voice. Mm. And I think when I was on stage, the emotions were stronger than the voice.
Is it the connection, though? Because I think even through the screen, I mean, I remember that exact moment, because you cried, and then I cried. And I think people in the audience would have cried, too, because I don't know whether it was the connection. It's the connection. That was the moment that you connected with everybody.
The moment that I actually opened the box.
Yes.
I was talking about the box and seeing the box and not wanting to look at the box. And all of a sudden, it's like...
And we were all there with you to share that moment, actually, which that was the fascinating part for me, you know?
And then there's a part later on where I just burst out laughing, which I hadn't planned to burst out laughing. It just came up and everybody was laughing along with it. So there's something about doing it live.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's like you prep, and then you just let it go, and you come from being...
You just stand in it, in that presence. Yeah.
Being
grounded
and being connected. And you know, all everything.
So I love that you also said, like, one of your sort of mantras, and actually I posted this on Twitter and on Facebook a few weeks ago when we talked about it, but you say that you can either be a leaf in the wind or you can be the wind. And it's that whole thing of, we always have a choice, even when we think that we don't. And I just wanted to know, where did that, was that sort of a, I guess, always a philosophy of yours, or where did that mantra come from?
I think I was coaching someone. My clients are amazing because they bring out some stuff that I say that I don't even know is there.
Yeah.
I was coaching someone and it came out because she was like, la, 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 kind of twirling around. And it's funny because I just coached her right before this. Paul, again, she is also in Australia. She's a brilliant lady that I've been coaching for a few years. Amazing female pilot, just I'm just humbled by just what a kick-ass power lady she is.
Yeah.
And sometimes, especially with her, or there's another business owner in Germany that I coach. Usually when I coach executives, you know, they don't have a boss, so we have a higher level conversation, almost as if I'm their hired boss, but not really. And there's always stuff that comes up. And that one I was like, oh, I need to write it down.
That was the gold. You're like, oh, wow, I've come up with the golden pieces.
The messenger, and it came through. Yeah. So, but yes, in a way, I feel like that's what my parents showed me, is to just keep following, keep creating, and keep following. You know, I have this analogy of, if we leave from Los Angeles to go to New York, for you, it could be from Perth to go to Victoria, you know, like you're going east. And let's say New York is one of the brightest cities in the world, and you're going there and it's nighttime, you're not going to see it from LA, but you can see the next 200 yards, and then you can see the next 200 yards. And so just keep following it. Yes, and then maybe with freeway closure, maybe you do decide to take a bus for 6 months or move someplace, you know, so however it works out, as long as you keep going east, you'll end there in your destination, and it's who you're becoming in the process that really... matters. So just keep following the yeses, and it's fine. Anytime I resist something, I remind myself, okay, where's the yes, and just keep following that.
So the other thing I was fascinated when we talked was that the impact that you had. So after the TED talk, you think, you know, you're going to experience this whole, you know, the love and, you know, the success, and you've done a TED talk, and actually things, you had a bit of a different experience.
Oh, the TED and the coin. Yeah, it was great. We went straight into the holiday season. It was like, ha, I can relax.
Yeah. But all that visibility, I mean, you were saying that actually that it had an interesting impact on you personally, all the visibility you got afterwards.
Yeah, in January, this was published January 3rd, 2013. They usually take a few weeks. If you do a TED Talk, they usually take a few weeks to publish it live, and it's published directly through their site. If it passes the quality control, not so much the content, of course, content is, you know, quality control comes before that, but also if it passes quality control of, like, was it good production value, like lighting, sound, and so on. I've known people whose sound, even though the quality of the talk was spectacular, but the sound was not good enough, and their talk was not uploaded. And then you can't repeat it, because it has to be spoken live with an audience to count to be uploaded on their site, and then you can embed it into through your site. So these are sort of like the logistics of how to make it happen. And if you
couple
know
of tips there though,
you know
what not to do.
For me, like, because maybe because I'm in Los Angeles, but anybody, I'm sure, if you know a good videographer around you, invite them to the production team on the TED Talk and see the TED Talk from the year before that they did, and how did it look? Did they have the good lighting, or was the person moving left and right, and so they were in and out of the lab, or the sound was, like, just watch and see so that you are in the
level.
Light, and your talk can have the best light to be a little soldier out there that goes and contributes to people around the world, because that's what I feel like, that's what a TED Talk is. It's like little soldiers of light that will touch and see and contribute to so many people unexpectedly beyond what you imagine. So what happened, it was published January 3rd, 2013, and I went to my first meeting. I was accepted into the New Hollywood, the Women's Philanthropy Goal Group, and by the time we had our first meeting, my TED Talk was done and published, which was...
And it was on your five-year goal, like, and you only put it on there just to get into the mastermind.
Yeah, whatever cooler you're drinking, I'm having it. Whatever it is, I was so grateful, because I would have never imagined that I would start beating it, and to have one of the goals, the five-year goals, already checked off. And it's been proven to be such a great stretch for me to be around women who, you know, kind of when you play tennis, there is that sense of... playing tennis with someone that's been playing tennis a little bit longer, a little bit deeper.
Yes.
So you just keep playing, right? And playing better and better. So, but I noticed that even though I love them to pieces, they're like sisters to me, when I walked into the room, I was like, okay, they haven't seen it yet. Mm-hmm. Or, oh shoot. And I would walk into another room and be like, oh, half of these people have seen it. And I started to feel so uncomfortable because of the story, And the nature of me sharing that, for me, it's as a speaker, I'm used to being visible. So it's not like I was shy or anything, but because of the nature of that particular story that I shared and the impact that I shared, that for me being healthy and fit, so being visible equal being in danger. So it felt like now I was being super hyper visible, and therefore it felt like, oh shoot, the internal danger red flag started to come up. So I would walk into a room and look around, do a scan, and then my level of safety feel, you know, started to contract or expand, like, oh, okay, nobody's seen it, cool. But then you want to see it. Like, now it's been seen over 200,000 times, and that's the intent. At the same time, I was doing social media, I was sharing it, but there was a bit of a, oh, shoot, that came with it. Now, the letters that came with it made that, oh, shoot, much more livable. Like the contribution, I've heard of women leaving an abusive marriage, or you know, going through, having the courage to go through a divorce and take their kids out, or you know, being able to actually speak their story. There was about half the women that I practiced this talk with who said that happened to me too, and I've never said that to anyone. Like, and some of these women are close friends of mine. And some realized that the reason they were keeping weight on was the subconscious protection, and have since, you know, started to lose that weight because they started to realize, to connect the dots. You know, so the impact has been really powerful, but internally I felt like I was crashing. And so I started to put the weight back on, which was the whole yo-yo of 20 some years. Every time that I
felt unsafe, you put weight on.
Every time that I would feel like I was starting to lose weight, become more visible, because when you're, you know, smaller, you're, I guess you're more vibrant, or I don't know, it's, there was a sense of like getting more attention, and it just felt like, oh shoot, I had to watch my back. And it wasn't a conscious, like, I'm all special and I'm all that. It wasn't that. It was more literally having to watch my, feeling like I was having to watch my back. So I started to put on weight again, which I had already lost. So now I was like, I can't believe this is starting again. But because I was inside of the New Hollywood, you know, my women's philanthropy goal group, and we looked at what was the challenge, one of the electives that we did, so this went on for a few months. And in August, one of the electives that we did, one of the extracurriculum courses that we did, was something called Get My Body Back. And we had put money on the line, and if we didn't get our body back, the money would go to charity. So it was 12 of us that chose to do it. And one was a single mom, and one was a working mom, and one was, you know, like, someone who just had a baby, and one was someone that was just working crazy travel, and she wanted to exercise, you know, three times a week, even when she was
she was trying to be superwoman.
So there was different women that were finding their self-care, their level of self-care. It looked different for each one of us. And for me, it was that being healthy and fit no longer feels like danger, but it feels like safety. So actually getting my body back, staying in my body, and not feeling like I have to watch my back. I can have boundaries, healthy boundaries, and not have people, you know, slime on me or, like, do inappropriate you know, comments or whatever, but still own my level of youth, my level of, like, feeling like I finally got my 18-year-old body back, and I can live in it rather than having it and feel afraid. Which maybe some people can relate to it.
I think a lot of people will relate to that. I think a lot of people will resonate with a lot.
There's a sense of, where am I going with this, Barbara? There's a sense of, it doesn't mean, like, it's not because you've had a trauma in your past that your body, you know, relates to it or not. It's more like who we feel as women. Sometimes it's like we're more than our body. We are more than this. So it doesn't matter if I put 20 extra pounds or 10 extra kilos, whatever. But then there's a part inside of us that's like, you know, but I want my vitality back. I want to be able to you know, wear what I like and participate and feel, you know, silently resigned. That's how I felt. Mm. It was a silent resignation. But I think
the experience, I mean, telling the story, it feels to me like you speaking that story and telling that story actually brought you right back, because you had pushed that away for a long time.
Yeah.
And it brought you right back there to deal with what
yeah, the only difference is now I had different tools, exactly. Yeah. And I took my toolbox to someone else who does the work that I do, because no matter how much of a brain surgeon we can be, we're not going to operate on ourselves, right? Yeah. So I took my whole toolbox to another brain surgeon, and I asked her, one of my dearest friends, and I asked her, will you do this work with me, on me? And we started to retool, because otherwise I would repeat the same pattern and feel like, even though I was coming closer to my fitness level, instead of being happy about it, I would feel harmed, which is every time that's what was going on. Every time that I would step on the scale and the scale was lowering, I would go, oh, no, instead of being happy about it.
Yeah, yeah. So you're going into danger zone again for you.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So when we did that shift after, you know, I just crashed for about 6 or 7 months, and I was like, okay, no more. This is getting me once and for all. And I decided where I needed to be. I did the healing work, you know, I decided where I needed to be size-wise back into, you know, my 18-year-old self. And then just a sense of vitality, really, and a sense of safety. It's not so much the size itself, but it's how you feel.
How you feel about it, yeah.
Yeah, like owning... I feel so many women, now that I've shared with them, it seems like all of us are looking behind us at some point for safety, whether there's been a trauma or not. And to be able to just own our body and be grounded and be in it allows us to have less of a concern for us and be even more of a contribution to others. Because ultimately, in the end, is who are we here to serve? How can we make it? The purpose that we're here to share.
It's interesting that you bring that point up, actually, because it kind of brings me on to the next thing that I really wanted to talk about. It's that a lot of women are really struggling to own their own worth and their own value, and to actually value what they do and the giving and serving that they do. So as women, we love to give. We give to our families, our communities, and we love to serve. But a lot of women in business, for example, are doing a lot of that, and finding it very hard to accept the other side of the value exchange, which is, of course, receiving. And what I mean by that is receiving in the form of money. So, like, getting paid their worth and what they actually, you know, what they do, what they give to the world. And I was interested to know, after your experience with TED, I mean, obviously now you had all this, you know, increased credibility, and I mean, you were the same person as you were before,
right?
But, you know, doing the same job, but because of the visibility and you know, what TED, the brand that TED brought to your, to what you do, how did you find coping with, like, the increased number of clients that wanted to work with you, and then, of course, you know, charging for that and being able to charge more because you're seen as worth more?
It gave me a sense of, not like I needed permission, but it gave me an extra oomph in the booty to raise my rates.
Yeah.
So raising your rates is also a great way of dealing with the influx of clients, because it's a filter. Your prices are your filters. Mm. The people who are really committed to those results will invest in themselves through you. It's just an exchange of energy that we call money, but they do invest in themselves through you.
Through you, now, your worth and your value.
That energy, and then you move it forward to something else. Like, I use that energy to put it towards a documentary that helps people detect cancer early, and, you know, so, like, it's all money is all energy anyway. So it just flows like a river. At least that's how I see it. So for me, it gave me more committed clients, like, because they were investing in themselves at an even higher level.
Yeah.
I was taking it like, this better work, you know, as far as the results and the partnership that we would be engaging in with them.
Yeah.
And they would come with, this better work. Great attitude to come to a first session, because it takes away, you know, all the, you move through the junk and you just... Like,
well, they're committed. They're really committed.
They're happy to do it. They were happy to get their results and, you know, soar even quicker. It's just, to me, oftentimes as women, and maybe men too, of course, but when we have a challenge, or if we've ever had a challenge with our rates, which I know sometimes you address, yeah. you know, as far as owning our worth, so challenge with our rates, you want to look and see not what it's worth for the client to have that result, but what would it be costing them to not have it?
Yeah, that's so powerful. It's a much better way of looking at that. Yeah.
It's a bookend, you know, because to me, it's not about the 10 hours that I may spend with a person or the...
Yeah.
you know, three sessions or whatever it is, it's how much longer does that result stay with them? And I work like, this is an appendectomy. We take it out, there's not going to be another one growing back.
Yeah.
So whether it's overwhelm, whether it's self-doubt, whether it's whatever it is, once it's gone, it's gone. Like, literally becomes irrelevant. It's just, it's not something you need to overcome procrastination. No, it's gone and it's gone.
Yeah.
So to me, it's not the time that we work together. It's the quality of life for the years to come.
Yeah.
And I have, you know, of course, the money back guarantee. It's America, we do that. But it, I also have a guarantee that if the issue ever comes back, you come back to me and we tweak it. It won't come back, but it gives the client a peace of mind. So as a business owner, you want to look at that as well as what is it costing them right now to not have this.
Yeah. And what will it cost them down the track? So, I mean,
of
for you,
course.
you change the trajectory of people's lives. You know, what is that worth? You know, that is really the question. What is it worth to them to have their life like you know, when train tracks go along?
Yeah, and
like
what
this,
is it costing them in time with their family? What is it costing them
in
quality
health, everything.
Of life? And what is it costing them in business? Like, are they reaching all the clients that they could be reaching? Because my sense is that they're serving their clients to the best of the ability already, but are they reaching all the clients that they could be reaching? You know, because now if you go higher and higher, then there's a sense of, like you're doing, there's videos that go out, and then you've got social media, and then you've got Oprah, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like,
yes, Oprah, if you're listening. We're all open for interviews.
My birthday buddy, bless her, love her so much, that there is an impact, you know, by one little video that is seen in South Africa, and it's seen in Israel, and it's seen in Canada. So instead of just the one-on-one exchange of, okay, so it's an hour, so it's $700, and that's what it's worth, and it's like,
What is it? Well, worth, and then actually value becomes subjective. It's different for everyone, so it depends on how much somebody wants the result, or, you know, the compound effect of the result. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember my coach at one point said, when the last time you doubled your rates? And I almost choked. I was like, oh my God. This was years ago, and then every year now I make it a point. They just double, and it's part of it. But I do have a sense of, I have a money-back guarantee, and I have a results guarantee. So I know that it's worth it. It's just that when the client knows that it's worth it, because you know that it's worth it, then just watch magic unfold.
And I just want to reinforce that point. When you know it's worth it for that client, I mean, that makes all the difference, I think, for women. And I think that's maybe somewhere where a lot of women do struggle, because that involves a lot of self-love and a lot of valuing your own worth, which is hard to do. Yeah,
the work that you need to do, you know, to get to the next level. Like my TED allowed me to go to a deeper
to
healing
elevate.
Something that I didn't even know was there to be healed, eating, or that was in the way, kind of like what my brother was saying, you know, like bumping up against something, not realizing what it is, or not being able to see it. And then being able to shift it and what that opens up.
Yeah. So, Pina, speaking of, you know, business and you know, growing great visions and making great impact in the world, what is the grand vision? What does the future hold for Pina and for all your business ventures?
I think the ability to serve more and more people. I am now... I'm doing my first huge keynote next week. There's going to be somewhere between 500 and 800 people there.
Oh, wow.
I'm working a lot more with corporate because, you know, corporate is people. So I'm working more inside of shifting corporations to allow their people serve their clients even more, and client retention and client service and themselves, of course. So more of the keynotes, more of the corporate talks. I will never stop the one-on-one. Yeah. I just love. You know, I have clients right now that are on different TV shows and happen to be going to the Cannes Film Festival with them in less than a month. So there is there's an opportunity to see people excel at their craft, whether they're a writer, whether they're an actor, whether they're a mom, whether they're a plumber. I have, you know, an owner of 20 different pharmacies. Whatever it is that you are here to do, if you can excel at it with ease, and I get to contribute to having that happen, that's what there's more of.
That lights you up.
In my future, because I love being able to be a messenger, conduit for that.
So if our viewers want to find out more about you and the amazing work that you do and connect with you, where should they go?
Yes. And I'm actually, if you go to gratitudeinternational.com, you'll see all my projects, whether it's a film project. I'm not a filmmaker per se, so it's not where I make my money, but it's where I spend my money. It's where I like to invest because it's film is such a universal language. And right now I am doing a documentary on cancer detection dogs. My best friend died of cancer almost 4 years ago now, and it was not detected early enough. And usually that's what happens. It was a misdiagnosis by several different doctors over a period of time, and then she passed away. By the time it was discovered, it just, you know, was a bit too advanced. So there's a ways to discover that early, and I'm putting my passion, my investment into allowing other people to experience that. So if you want more details on that, just go to Gratitude International. You can see all kinds of videos from clients or films or the TED Talk. Everything is there. If you want to know more about like where I'm speaking and more, like you happen to be the cousin of the person that runs American Express Australia, then absolutely.
Here's my mobile number.
Exactly. Bring me in as a speaker. And you can go, my site is pinaderosa.com. So it's P-I-N-A-D-E-R-O-S-A.com altogether. They're both linked to each other.
Yes.
But Pina De Rosa's site is more specifically on speaking. And the Gratitude International is, like you said at the beginning of the call, all these different projects. They all have one element of connectedness, which is the gratitude. They all have the person that is involved in that project and myself leave with an experience of gratitude for having participated. So that's why the company is called that.
Yes.
And if you would like, if you feel like from having heard this share, and you'll watch the TED Talk, it's on both sites, or you can just Google me and it'll pop up there. But if you feel like there's an area of your life, so you're now watching this and you feel like there's an area of your life where you're not quite living to the fullest potential, there's a couple weeds here and there, like you're the Ferrari, but you're in second gear.
You have a flat tire.
Maybe taking surface streets. You're not quite purring down the freeway, right? Yeah. So whether you're a successful business owner, whether you're a budding solopreneur, or just someone who's ready to get into the next level of optimized action and you want some little support on that, clarity, whatever it is, let's set up, my gift to you is to set up a one-on-one time. There's not going to be a cost to you. There's going to be truly a gift because of who Barbara is.
Oh, that's so amazing, Pina.
And absolutely would love to do it. We can do it on Skype. It's private. It's confidential. It's one-on-one. But I have to tell you, it's not for the faint at heart. It is truly, the strategy session, which is what I call this, is truly designed to have you be in action by the end of that hour. And you will be. So there's going to be so much clarity and so much inspired action that watch out world, you know, here you come.
Yeah.
So we can set it up, the way to set it up, I know you'll put links and everything around.
The link will actually be showing up right now.
Perfect. Go to gratitudeinternational.com and then look for the tab that says strategy session.
Yeah.
A video will pop up, a couple of things. It'll ask you to answer some questions. It's just so I can best prepare for it. Now, here's the secret. I don't work with everybody that puts that in there, but if you put in there that you came from Barbara, I'll put you to the top of the list, and of course I'll be happy to honor that for you. And
That's so kind of you, Pina. I think the viewers are gonna love that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We've got lots of viewers in Ireland and the UK and everywhere. So, yeah.
Yes, back home. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
In Italy, actually, I have some viewers in Italy as well. I do.
It's it's my way of tithing to... There's so many people in Russia. I just love it. So if there's something that you feel, because it's not about me loving it, it's more about you receiving what it is that you want to get to. Sometimes it's just a little, like my pilot, going back to her at the beginning of this call, you know, she says that even if you shift the route of a flight by 1%, it's not going to land at the airport where it was intended to land. So sometimes it's just that one little 1%. And,
I will encourage everybody watching to please take up that offer, because you know you sometimes you don't even know what's stopping you. You don't even know what's there.
Yeah. Let's have a chat if there's any questions. If you want to do a TED Talk and you're like, how do I get started? Whatever it is, you may know anything about TED Talks and now you'll find out all about it. Or it may be just something that Barbara, a tool that she's given you that's amazing, that's fantastic, and a yeah but, like an internal thing, not a questioning of what you're offering, but an internal second guessing comes up. Let's clear out that second guessing so that then what you are offering them can be of service to them and get the results that are available.
I think I'll be taking the first one on how to do a TED Talk, on getting myself on TED.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's one of my goals, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, look, Pina, it's been such a pleasure having you on the show and my first international guest, which I'm very excited about. So thank you so much for contributing. And I know so many people are going to get so much out of this interview.
Thanks.
So, and remember, all you viewers, tune in next week when I'm going to be talking to Laura McKenzie from the Scale Investor Network. And we're going to be talking about how to get angel investors on board for your venture. Huge topic. Yeah. And I'm also going to be on iTunes later this week on my podcast. And I'm going to be talking about my key takeouts from my chat with you, Pina, today. So I'll be doing a quick 10-minute sort of lowdown for people who are really time poor. Yeah.
Yeah, and we'll share it with the world, absolutely.
Yeah,
if there's any questions, you guys listening in, whenever this is, 2 a.m., 6 months from now, whenever it is, please reach out, either through Barbara or through me. We're here to be of service, really, truly. It's you being your best.
Great. Okay, see you next week, guys.